Hey everyone, Chris here. Just a quick intro, because we have a lot to get to. That's right, this is part one of a three-part series on Fevers and Mirrors. This is an album that came out in 2000 by Bright Eyes and completely shifted the landscape of the indie emo genre. A quick thank you to our patrons, Goldie and Mom, and really, without further ado, let's get into this monster.
Hi, we're back. This is Radio K, and we're here with Chris of the podcast Connor's Basement. How you doing, Chris?
Fine, thanks. Just a little wet.
Oh, yeah, it's still coming down out there.
Yeah, sort of had to run from the car.
Well, we are glad you made it for the new episode of the podcast we're starting. This is Jesse of Connor's Basement. And as we said, we are here today to discuss what we've been building up for, well, since we started this podcast.
Yeah.
The Bright Eyes album, Fevers and Mirrors.
It's a great album, right? That's all that needed to be said.
Yeah. All right. Great. So we'd like to thank our patrons. if you want to head over to the Patreon page and support us, we're also on Ko-fi. I mean, I want to let you start, Chris. I want you to, like, we're going to gush about this album. The entire 5 hours that you're going to be listening to this, you're going to hear nothing but overflowing praise and just utter love for this album. But I kind of want Chris to lead us in, because I feel like he's going to bring us the best vibes coming into this album.
All right. I'll rise up to the pressure. Yeah, but I would say, like, buckle in. We don't know how long this is going to be. My notes alone are 6 pages, single spaced. And we kind of went into it discussing the fact, like, we're not pulling any punches. We're not going to be removing too much discussion in our edits and things like that. We kind of wanted to leave a lot in because we do want to gush about the album. Growing up, one of my favorite albums, my favorite Bright Eyes album for sure. And I know the same is true for you too, Jesse.
Oh yeah, absolutely true. You know, when we were doing Every Day and Every Night, as soon as I was done listening to that album the first way through, just to like refresh my memory, like dive back into it. Other times we've done reviews, I've said like, oh, let me go back and listen to that a second time. As soon as I was done with Every Day and Every Night, I was like, all right, now right on to Fevers and Mirrors. Let's just go on to the next one.
I definitely put a lot of listens back in because, you know, listening to it as just like, I love this album and as a fan, and I listened to it a certain way where I picked things up and I found some things. But going back to it and saying like, I want to break apart this album. I want it to make sense. I want to really understand the story. I gained newfound appreciation for a lot of the work that was done. So it definitely heightened my love of the album. So I would definitely say if you're a fan of Bright Eyes or if you're a fan of whatever band, try doing this with an album or even a song that you like. It really does bring up a lot.
That idea of going back and re-listening to like your favorite band or your favorite album. I'm definitely a layman when it comes to music and like Chris likes to refer to it as like the sonic side of a song. But what I'll do is when I'm re-listening to a song or an album, I will try to pinpoint with my ear like one instrument and really just zero in on that. And just try to follow that instrument throughout the song. Because sometimes you'll hear different things going on that if you weren't maybe paying attention to. Again, I'm a layman. So maybe to some people, listening to the bass line is like second nature. But for me, like right. If you just follow the bass, I hear things that maybe I wasn't paying attention to before. And I found that with multiple re-listens to this album, I would kind of, you know, just follow a different instrument. And see where that journey led me. And like you were saying, I was paying more attention to the story and paying more attention to what kind of narrative the speaker is going through. So both of those things, just going back and re-listening to it and going on that journey over and over again, was really interesting.
Yeah, and musically for this album, I get vibes from Aeroplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel, which I'm assuming there's a pretty decent crossover between people that like at least this era of Bright Eyes and Neutral Milk Hotel. And a fun fact on Letting Off the Happiness, Neutral Milk Hotel's drummer, who's credited for drums on a couple of the songs. So it's not so surprising that maybe Bright Eyes' sound shifted a little bit in that way and they took some inspiration. But I also think, too, you're going from Letting Off the Happiness every day and every night. I think Bright Eyes at this point are cementing themselves as staples of this scene, of this genre, and probably also have access to a better production, different musicians and things like that, where Letting Off the Happiness is kind of like a garage band album. Every day and every night, it's an EP, it's a little shorter form. And then Fevers and Mirrors, here comes our big entrance into music, I guess, or into the mainstream-ish.
I mean, maybe closer to the mainstream and maybe closer to like what people might expect from, we had mentioned last episode, the temptation to lump Bright Eyes into the emo genre. And if there was ever an album that could sort of muscle its way into that genre and maybe even do some things that redefine it, this might be it.
Yeah,
I don't know if those are big, bold fighting words. but I meant to ask you, I have continued to forget to bring my big box of vinyls to my apartment from my parents' house.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm totally prepared for this. But I wanted to check the credits, and I wanted to know if Tim Kasher was involved in this album at all.
Oh, I don't even have to look. Yes, he was.
There's such cursive influence that I'm hearing in this album, especially in some of like the screamier songs, that for a couple of moments I'm like, Tim Kasher needs to be involved here.
Oh, well, I was just going to say he's credited for accordion, which does pop up in a couple of songs. I know for a fact it comes in Something Vague, which is a special song that we'll talk about later. So yeah, I think both by proxy of being a close collaborator and friend of Connor and the fact that he did contribute accordion, probably other things, I can double check, for sure left his mark on the album.
Yeah, I'm sure like just them in a room and working in a, well, I don't know. Do you have any, I'm assuming they've left. That's gonna be an Instagram post. You know that, right?
That is.
As I was saying, I was curious whether if you knew if any of this stuff was properly recorded in the studio or if they were still working with their four-track machine down in the basement.
Yeah. So of the at least the remaster vinyl, it's kind of sparse in terms of the information that you get. It's not as long as, let's say, Letting Off the Happiness, where it goes track by track, here's info on this song, here's info on this song. Rather just highlighting who played on each song and then some thank yous at the end. But it definitely was recorded in a more professional space. But unfortunately, you don't get all the little details like so-and-so came by and played a triangle in the background or something like that.
Right.
Even though I'm sure some of that stuff was still going on, or like we recorded this chorus in the back of a tour van or something like that. Yeah, definitely more of a concerted effort towards a polished album.
Well, if that's all we really want to touch on as far as production background excuses to talk about Tim Kasher, do we want to talk about the themes and the story behind the story of the album, I should say?
We gave this warning last time, give it again. This album absolutely, and I know that a lot of my interpretations of songs will go into heavy topics, depression, suicide, things like that. If you're not in a great headspace, definitely recommend, hey, hit pause, come back and listen in a time that you're feeling a little bit more ready for it. because we'd love to share our thoughts on this album with you.
Absolutely. You need to take care of yourself. You need to make sure that you're in the proper headspace to listen to what we have to say. And we are going to talk about some heavy topics. And, you know, the best part about podcast is that you can pause us and we'll always be right there ready to continue talking. Unlike That's your friends, because they might actually get annoyed if you put them on pause and not talk to them.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll forgive you. Your friends might think you're an asshole.
I don't know. We're going to check those metrics. Who stopped listening at this point, at this time? Well, we're going to check the metrics.
I'm loading my rifle. Who stopped? Who stopped listening?
Oh, man. Well, speaking of themes, I do notice there is a good deal of repeated imagery throughout the album. Fevers, mirrors, scales, clocks. Jesse, could you discuss some of this?
Sure. Well, let's see. The fever is...
First, let me say, this is a brilliant record, man. We're all really into it here at the station. We get lots of calls. It's really good stuff.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
So, tell us a little bit about your reading of the album.
Well, I had mentioned last episode that a lot of the songs in Every Day and Every Night felt like a dark reflection of some of the songs in Letting Off the Happiness. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe it's a little cliched to say, but I have a feeling that maybe that's what this album was. So much like we're going to go on to talk about I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning and Digital Ash in a Digital Urn, where there's these two simultaneous records being released at the same time, but both have mm-hmm. two very different subject matters, even if they kind of touch on the same themes.
Right.
I think that Fevers and Mirrors is a really good counterpart to Letting Off the Happiness, in that there's a very similar story going on, but there are darker moments and twists and turns that happen in that story.
Yeah.
And there is that adolescent malaise that is not helped by substance abuse and bad decisions. I don't know how in depth we want to get about like our theories of like what the story is about, or if we want to go through that as we go through the album, but that's essentially the overall idea that I have about the album.
Okay. Yeah. I almost see it as a continuation of our story, right? And I know we give the disclaimer every time when we reference Connor as the protagonist in this story. You know, this is a story. And so, yeah, some of this might be based off of some biographical event, but absolutely not retconning Connor's childhood and life and saying like, oh, this is exactly what happened because, I was the one that had this grandiose idea of what it was about. But I do see it almost like a continuation. So a lot of that is mirrored. Overall, I do want to give a little bit of a teaser and like what I think the main stories are. I have a lot of symbols I'll pull out, but those I want to bring into the tracks themselves. I think there are two stories going on. And I guess I'm saying this because I want to make my case. And by the end of it, have everyone agree with me and shower me with praise. Because of how right I was.
I'm already writing you a 5-star review on iTunes. I'm doing that as we speak. I don't even have to listen to your arguments. I know that you're right.
Well, the first one is that there is some, I think he discusses some kind of event or trauma that he and someone else lived through. When I say event or trauma, event might be a relationship ending or, you know, anything vague in that sense. I'm not sure. But I think that's a catalyst for some of the songs. He might refer to it as the memory or the secret. And then the second story, I think, is about his career as a musician and some of the conflict that it generates for him. And that's what I'll say. I know you said that you weren't sure if you were going to mention kind of the broad theme. If you want, go for it.
Not to steal your thunder or anything, but you mm-hmm. you summed up my thoughts pretty succinctly as well.
Ooh.
Like there is totally a theme of a destroyed or dissolved relationship of some sort, Though I have a feeling like we might have some differing opinions on what that relationship looked like.
Right.
Although I don't know, we're kind of the same person, so we might have the same ideas.
Yeah, and I think an important note too, like Jesse and I chose not to talk about our theories ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah. I especially with this, because this is an album that meant so much to us. And also because I don't know whether we agreed to this or we subtly knew it individually, but I have a feeling like we're going to end up agreeing with and coming up with similar ideas just accidentally.
Yeah.
And I totally picked up the, like, there's that tension of the maybe a mythologized version is kind of like a weird way to say it, but like the character of Connor, but then the actual Connor Oberst, who's like going on tour and performing and needing to reconcile something of celebrity, not necessarily yeah. like that he's, you know, the next big thing, but rather I can see a kid like this, not saying that I know him or knew him as a kid, but like based on how he's writing songs, I can't imagine somebody who has this much kind of stuff living in his head, performing that, showing it to people, making money off of it, having it be a commodity, and not being disturbed by that to some extent. As artists, right. you always want to share that stuff. But I think every artist kind of gets a little uncomfortable when it's something that like you realize it's performance and it's entertainment, and you have to come to grips with the fact that your pain is somebody else's good time. We really dig this album and we've enjoyed this since we were in high school, but there is that little bit of discomfort of there is some honesty here and that we're enjoying essentially some teenager's angst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's really well put. Gonna cut you off there though, because we want to make sure we save some for the songs. I feel so overeager to to jump in and like respond more to that, but we'll let the music do the talking. So I mean, if you're ready, why don't we jump into the first one?
If it's time, let's go together.
So, a spindle, a darkness, a fever, and a necklace. Here it is, track one of Fevers and Mirrors. And honestly, I feel like that's the first time I've ever said the name of that song properly. But in the beginning of this song, you hear Connor talking to an English language learner. I remember reading somewhere that Connor's mom was an ELL teacher.
Oh, cool. I didn't know
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So, like, you know, you heard similar conversations on Every Day and Every Night towards the end and that
oh,
kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting because that EP ends like that. And this EP starts with Connor helping him read the book. It's called Mitchell is Moving.
Yes.
And it makes me wonder if the subject of the song is a person who left Omaha and Connor behind. But it could also just be used as a metaphor for growing and changing and moving on as well, rather than physically moving.
Absolutely. I definitely picked up that the subject of the storybook seems very much in line with, even if it's not necessarily the character or the human person, Connor, that there is this this discomfort with staying put, with like these two characters arguing over like, you've only lived next door for 15 years, 16, 15, 16. What's the difference? I want you to stay next door forever. There's this tug and pull of like, do you move away because you're restless and you need a change for the sake of change? And then there's this other side of maybe some other themes that will come up of wanting things to stay the same, of wanting right. people not to move, to not go away. And maybe that can be very destructive. I don't know what I could be hinting at.
Yeah. And I think this song does a really good job of starting off the album. You know, it's a solid intro track because it really does set the theme for a lot of the future tracks. And I think it actually references them in subtle ways, or at the very least, it introduces us to a number of the symbols that are going to be used throughout the album. So the first one I want to mention is in the beginning, just lyrically, it sounds like Connor's describing a music box. You turn on a spindle, you're so much looser now, not explaining how you gain such new repose. And in the background, the guitar part, it's very short, very staccato, very on the beat. And it gives the sense of like that plucking, almost like mechanical plucking of a music box, because it uses pins. And so it's kind of reflected there. And I will say music box does also appear later on a track that I'll mention. So that's the first one that I hear in Connor introducing it. Additionally, in the first verse, you know, he's discussing this other person, I don't know, a lover, a friend, family member, whomever, and their growth. And I think that's something that's being mirrored with Mitchell Is Moving. And he's reflecting on that chorus with the first verse, how they've managed to overcome whatever issue or trauma that they've had, unlike Connor, that they've managed to succeed in the face of adversity where he hasn't.
Okay, so this actually fits into something darker that I saw in the song. Mm-hmm. And we've already given our spoiler warning or our trigger warning. So people should be prepared for this kind of thing. But, and I think your comparison to a music box really fits well into this. So you said before about how there is Connor, the character, is not able to cope with some of the pressures that we're going to see throughout this album. And unsurprisingly, I think suicide is a huge... quick aside. I'm already distracting myself. But there's a difference between a theme and a motif. So a theme is usually a sentence, like true love conquers all is a theme. And a motif is just either a symbol or an image that just keeps recurring over and over again.
Right, right.
So like a music box definitely comes up over and over again. Spindles, like he's basically listing, here's all the stuff we're going to explore later on. So right. The motif of suicide is there, I think, throughout all these songs. And you've gained such new repose in response to talking about turning on a spindle. And to me, what that evokes is somebody hanging themselves. Hmm. And I know that sounds really dark, but the way that the dancer of a music box spins gently with music, and the way that a body might hang as rope or string does from a spindle, kind of brings that image to mind, especially since when you think of repose as a sort of rest.
Right.
There is this sort of grim rest that comes in the repose of somebody hanging at the end of a rope. And go on.
No, go ahead.
And so I think that the song is really as gentle of an intro as we're ever going to get for an album so dark. And I think that it's interesting that we're laying down, like, I think that even if I might be off base and I'm reading too far into something that might not be there, the fact that Connor's already introducing us to the fact that there are multiple ways out of a situation, and that there are good ones and not so great ones, like the ones that I'm describing, kind of prep us for some of the stories and plot lines that we're going to get through this album.
Mm-hmm. I think we are going to diverge a little bit here.
Mm.
I do see the motif of suicide. However, I think it is in another piece of the puzzle in this song. Before I get there, just because I want to go in chronological order of the song for so there's one other thing I want to jump to
sure.
Before I talk about that one. So he mentions a locket, right? And A Locket is, I think, pretty universal in terms of what it does. You know, it's something you keep close to your heart. It's locked. It is, and I think it serves as a symbol for a secret that they're hiding. Again, going back to my idea of there being the shared event that they both have, that this person is keeping that event close to the chest, and maybe so close that Connor, a biased narrator in this, feels that it's choking them. And then the second verse is when we start talking about Connor himself. So when you talk about suicide, I see that as the girls bringing water. Mm. And water is a symbol that will come up time and time and again. And I think that is a symbol for death.
Interesting.
So the fever, I'm not going to read the lyrics word for word. I do recommend that you pull them up if you're interested. He mentions a fever. I'm just going to rip that straight from the fake interview. It's whatever ails you or oppresses you. I think right. That is a pretty straightforward reading of it. Sweat, he mentions, and that will come up again. And I think about the idea of sweating out a fever, of going through the worst of something to rid yourself of it. So to get over your depression, working through it and having to go through the dregs of sweating it out.
Mm.
And sorry, I've got one more.
No, please go for it, man.
Then the necklace. So that experience of working through this fever ends up hanging on a necklace. So the beads of sweat. And he's showing it off to everybody, saying, hey, I'm working through all of this stuff. All of that will hang like a necklace around his neck. And then it's contrasted with the locket, this person that keeps the secret close and hidden, and Connor working through it is showing it off for everybody.
Now, I really like that analysis. And yeah, I think we did definitely diverge with how we read this, but I really like that, the difference between what is worn around the character's neck, especially since, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't mean to hype what you just said, but there's the idea of wearing something that's very, if we're going to think about a traditional locket, it's typically something that's made of a precious metal, right? So it's mm-hmm. going to be something that is precious, but conceals. Whereas a necklace of sweat is like, you know, we use sweat as a stand-in for effort or exertion. Mm-hmm. And that is being placed around, again, the character Connor's neck by this chorus of women, as it's being described here. And one of my favorite lines from this song is the what those girls are saying in the song. And it's really sweet in a grim way. Don't you do what you've wanted to do. Don't destroy yourself like those cowards do. So a very explicit reference to suicide, or at least self-harm.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the sun keeps coming up because it's gotten used to you and your constant need for proof. And there's just something really grim and really sweet about that. Like, it's something that I really like about the sappier and soppier lines that Connor comes up with, is that they're honest. They can still be sweet, but they're more humble. The fact that this isn't some bombastic praise, but there's something kind of nice about being told that maybe the days keep going because there's something beautiful about the way that you demand your life has meaning. I would love to be told that. That would be really... Write that to me as a Valentine this year. I would love that as a Valentine's Day card.
And you know what? I cannot give away yet something to deal with that line. But what you just said clicked something for me. Mm. Because I was actually very puzzled about how to read that. But that idea of your desire to go another day is what creates another day.
Mm, yeah.
I really like that. So that's all I have to say on that piece. And really I said what I needed to about this song as well. There is so much to it, and we can already see where we're like, we're intersecting and where we're coming apart. But at the same time, we're pulling out the same ideas. We're just arranging them in a different order, a new arrangement, perhaps.
I was really hoping you would do it. You did it.
I did it.
Placed the medal around his neck.
Well, Jesse, did you have anything else for this?
I do want to hint that there is one thing that I'm, much how you hinted that there's something that you want to get to in further songs. Mm-hmm. The motif of there being like these girl saviors and these dreamlike saviors that happen to take the form of girls. And yeah. I'm assuming young women, right? Like, let's just assume that he's talking about like
a romantic interest.
And a romantic interest. I want to draw a connection to Big Surprise, another novel, but that's going to come in a later song. And I have a strong feeling like we're going to end up talking about this stuff during the same song, but I guess we'll all discover how much we're the same person. So.
Well, man, let's get into the next one. A scale, a mirror, and those indifferent clocks. So this song is interesting because the titles clearly reference each other. It seems to be an extension of the previous song, maybe bringing up a little bit more or a few more of the symbols that we'll hear throughout the album. But they really seem to be drastically different in terms of what they're talking about. Like, just the main reading I have for the song is that he's talking about the randomness of the world and seemingly critical of intelligent design, which is not something foreign to Connor. He mentions it throughout his entire discography. But it is an interesting, I don't necessarily know, and maybe I'm missing something, exactly how that fits in the track list. But it really does seem to be, you know, you'll find easily more than sufficient doubt these colors you see were picked in advance by some careful hand. Like he's saying, if you actually look at it, you'll find that there is a randomness to the world. That language just happened. It wasn't planned. But it's kind of interesting because I don't see where that fits.
I agree to some extent, because I think that it falls under the category of things that you push against and question in adolescence. The idea that, especially with the character of Connor being someone who is both disdainful and jealous of faith as a concept, but I think it kind of opens the door to what I think is the tension of the rest of the album, which is if you don't have faith that some grand arbiter is responsible for this beauty, then where does it come from? And what are you putting your faith in? Mm-hmm. And you get, you know, spoilers, I guess, for the next song, like you get some pretty toxic understandings of like of like what you need and where beauty comes from,
right,
and that sort of thing. You go from that first stanza talking about like colors not being chosen by let's say God. You know, God didn't make these beautiful colors and put them in such a way. It's us who did it, which seems to be confirmed in the next stanza, where there's huge attention paid to colors of former lovers' eyes, mm-hmm. where, you know, the iris is green, but when you made her cry, they were red. And so it seems like there's that jealousy still there, where I don't have a god I can blame for why these colors are so perfect for what I'm feeling. So it must be my fault. Or it must be my doing that I'm noticing these things.
Interesting.
At least
that's
my interpretation of it.
Yeah. In the second verse, I really like the mirror line because I think it speaks to the subversion of what mirrors are generally used for, right? Because we use them as reflections of ourselves. Like, oh, there's a pimple on my face. But what Connor ultimately says is that when you start looking at what is not in the frame, when you start looking at the things that you are missing and subverting what a mirror is actually used for, that is when you can quote unquote contract the disease that doctors can't treat, which is what I would say probably would be some form of cognitive distortion or maybe like depression or, you know, something like that. Whenever you start focusing on the things that you lack when you look at yourself is when those thoughts and those feelings are going to become part of the mainstay of your train of thought.
Hold on 1 second. Mm-hmm. Gonna just go to my phone and I'm gonna go in and type 911. Just give me 1 second. Shh, shh, shh. Just 1 second. Okay. Yes. Yes. Put me through to the police. A man just stole the words right out of my mouth.
I was like, where the hell is this bit going?
I have to admit, that might have been the most gratuitous I've been with
it. That is very gratuitous. I loved it.
Jokes aside, I completely agree with your assessment of that line, because I would even use maybe terms like dysmorphia or dysphoria.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like you, when you are aware of what you are and what you have, that can only be established when you juxtapose it to what you are not and what you lack. And so for somebody in a negative headspace, maybe they think too much about what they lack and what they aren't, as opposed to what they are and what they have. So yeah, I'm super glad we're on the same page about this, because that was really my, I think that was my major note for this one. I've got two more notes, but I want to give you a chance to, if you've got anything else you want to say. I don't want to steal any of your thunder before we move on to the next one.
Well, I'll just say score one in Chris's column, and maybe you will steal some of my thunder at one point to even the score. Yeah, that's all I really wanted to say for this song. But yeah, curious to hear what else you have for it.
So I just have two notes. One is small and kind of a joke, but the other is perhaps it fits more into the other themes and motifs of our album here. The second to last stanza, language just happened, it was never planned, and it's inadequate to describe where I am in the room of my house where the light's never been. I know that he's probably talking about the attic of his house. It seems mm-hmm. like throughout his discography, the attic seems more like the place that he'd be talking about. Right. I want to think this was the basement, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This has got to be the basement. So I just wanted to give a little basement shout out right here. And the last thing I wanted to mention before we move on to our next song is, once the page of a calendar is turned, it's no more. So then tell me, what was it for? I think this is a really interesting line, because it does bring to mind the immediacy of adolescent thought and how teenagers particularly think about the present. And I can definitely see teenagers and even adults thinking, if my actions aren't substantially affecting me from the past, like if the thing I did wasn't this big monumental decision or action that's still doing something for me now, what basically happened on that last page of the calendar? Does mm-hmm. it matter? Sometimes, could that be a good thing, considering the fact that a lot of this album is about the past haunting someone? It seems interesting how there's almost this complaint of, well, what's the point of the past when the past seems to be haunting this character just as much as the uncertainty of the future.
Right.
And that's really all I had for this one. I'm eager to talk about The Calendar Hung Itself, because woof, that's all I can say.
Yeah, Calendar Hung Itself. It is such a, I'm going to sound so weird. It's a groovy song, man. Yeah. I don't know why it was the first adjective I thought of, but you have this very like, it is a very Latin rhythm, very strong, very angry. It is a great freaking song.
Oh my goodness. I think this might be, and this might be the, I have two very scalding hot takes about this song. Okay. So the first is that this might be the only fun song of the album. Is that fair to say? Like, if you were to say, like,
name a fun song off of Fevers and Mirrors. And you put
I would
a gun
say it depends on your definition of fun.
Yeah, that's true. That's very subjective. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, yeah. I think I've said this in the past. Like, I like really poppy, upbeat songs, despite being like an emo boy at heart. I do love pop, and I do love very like quick tempo songs. And this one fits the bill. But hot take number two. Kind of a stalky song.
Oh yeah, no, I don't even know if that's
that might be like a been in the microwave overnight hot take.
Yeah,
like not honest... on. Like the microwave isn't on. Like you set it for 3 minutes and then went to bed, and then you woke up like at noon the next day, hungover, and forgot that you put it in the microwave.
You
in the first
put your
place.
Burrito in there.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that first verse, honestly, like, I tried every which way to, like, find another way to read it. Like, no, like, this is just the character Connor desperately, like, pleading with someone, like, attempting to show how much more he loves her than anybody else does, you know? And what I will say, a different time, and I don't mean that as, like, it was okay back then, but... as a angsty 18-year-old, I definitely had these visions of, like, these immature, incorrect visions of what love is, you know, of it's obsessive. And the thought of nobody will ever love you like I do being a sort of sweet thing, but you grow up and you realize, like, it's not correct. It's not right. It's possessive. You know, and part of that, I would say, is it could be one of two things. It could be an earnest attempt at Connor writing something immaturely, or it could be a reflection of like, this is someone who I was, you know, and I've he's grown past that in a sense.
And I think it might be a bit of column A and a bit of column B, because I think that like you can reflect on and criticize a component of yourself and also acknowledge that you were like once that thing.
Right.
And that's really the only way that you can grow. Otherwise you're in denial.
Well, sometimes your eyes must do some raining, of course.
If you're ever going to grow. That's good. Solid. A plus.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've successfully stolen back the thunder. So I completely agree in that those thinking about all those fairy tales that drugged us, the fact that protagonists of love stories are so persistent in their, for want of a better word, their quest for their love. And it's somehow seen as noble to do something like what the speaker of the song is doing, like these constant pleas, these constant proofs and affirmations of your ability to love this person more than anybody else, which is misguided and maybe arrogant at the same time. But something that I always heard one line a very particular way. And then I found the lyrics on a site that I trust the lyrics from and was a little disappointed with how they phrased it. So at the end of the first stanza, and does he cry through broken sentences like I love you far too much? I put the quotation marks like, quote, I love you far too much, end quote. But the air quotes official lyrics say like, quote, I love you, quote, far too much. And I think, like, to me, I like the idea of somebody saying I love you far too much as a phrase sounds way more desperate and bombastic than just saying I love you.
Well, I can maybe throw a little gray in there because
sure.
In the vinyl. Now, again, this is the remastered vinyl. I don't know. Actually, I have the CD, like the original CD. I can go run and grab it, and maybe the lyrics are slightly different on there. But on this, it says, and does he cry through broken sentences like I love you far too much? No quotes at any part. So in a way, maybe that saves you, like, the interpretation could be either way.
Okay, that my worldview is preserved. Thank you. I didn't have to challenge the way that I saw the world.
That is honestly a good thing, right? We should never be reflective in any way.
Good. I will not continue to challenge myself and grow as a person as long as you just tell me that I'm good as I am right now, and I will I will fight like hell to hide that I'm giving up.
I don't even have a response. I just gotta laugh.
I'm gonna beat you at this game, Chris. You're gonna...
Oh, shit. Yeah, so moving on to the second verse, Chicago. And this could be a hot take. We'll see. We'll find out. First, I do want to call attention to the "I drug your ghost across the country line," because I think that's really neat. He does this like interesting play with like the past tense of drag and to drug someone in there. It's kind of a cool way that he brings in both words.
Yeah, there's almost this hostage situation being played with here, where you almost don't know who is doing the hostage taking. It almost seems like this person is, whereas dragging someone implies that you're sort of taking them against their will, you can almost make an argument for the fact that the ghost is doing the same thing to the speaker. And the fact that there's that reference to illicit substances is really cool as well. So yeah, totally.
Yeah. Moving on from there. So he says, "I was determined in Chicago, but I dug my teeth into my knees." One thing that I think of from this, I think of "Let's Not Shit Ourselves."
Yeah.
Because what Connor says in "Let's Not Shit Ourselves" is, "I awoke in relief. My sheets and tubes were all tangled, weak from whiskey and pills in a Chicago hospital." My hot take is that in "Calendar Hung Itself," Connor is referencing the suicide attempt that then comes up unlifted in the next album. So, you know, I'm not totally sure because it's not overt. You know, I'm sure Connor has been to Chicago more than once in his life, but there are lines later, really the last lines of the song. He talks about the clock's heart hanging inside its open chest, hand stretched towards the calendar, hang itself. "I will not weep for its dying days. For all the ones who've left, there are a few that stayed, and they found me here and pulled me from the grass where I was laid." The way that I read that is almost like the blur and vagueness of days leave him feeling hopeless and alone. But there are some of the positive days, the happy days, that kept him alive and pulled him from the grass, where he later woke in relief. His sheets and tubes are all tangled. So there's this kind of hand of fate that swooped in, and kind of, as you said in the first track, with the sun coming up because it's gotten used to your constant need for proof, maybe it's Connor referring back to that in a sense, where he's saying that the good, the happy, the positive days may have been the thing that kept him alive when he was close to death. And so, like I said, maybe a bit of a stretch, but I think it's possible that those two things are connected, those two songs.
I can certainly see that connection. And I think that so this was maybe the most curious thing that happened when I was revisiting this album. The point that you touched on when it came to the last few lines of the song about him being pulled from the grass where he was laid. But I find that both the end of this song and the end of this album ends on an abruptly positive note, that there tends to be in a lot of Bright Eyes albums a tug and pull of positive and negative. But this particular song, as well as this particular album, has this trend of being very, very dark and continues so until there is a sudden and abrupt shift to the positive. And I love this album and will continue to love this album, but I am curious where the turn comes in. It does seem sort of out of left field that all of a sudden there's this positiveness where, or rather positivity, where previously there's sort of no indication that there would be such a turn, if that makes any sense. Like, it doesn't seem like there's not a... We go from desperation and obsessive love and a very, very heavily implied suicidal thoughts to suddenly, well, the possibility of a brighter future is just there and pulls me up from my depression. And I'm not saying that that's not a good message. I'm just curious how it's earned and how it just kind of feels out of left field to me personally.
Right. And, you know, maybe that is something, because we'll be going through the other albums. Maybe that's something that gets answered on one of the future ones. Kind of like in Every Day and Every Night, we're left a little bit in limbo. Mm. Maybe something is true for Fevers and Mirrors, where it is an exploration of some of that stuff, but just wasn't able to also dive into what it was that changed or something like that, you know?
Yeah, quite so. I think that in the grand spectrum of like criticisms, it's not, I'm not like absolutely raking this album over the coals or the song over the coals, but it does make me think, like, I wanted definitely to run that by you because I didn't know whether I was being too harsh or maybe I was like getting jaded in my old age. And I didn't quite see where that change had happened as far as like the shift from the absolute negative to like this glimmer of hope. But to, as like a counter to my own point, maybe that is just the fickleness of adolescent emotion, that maybe this is, and I'm not discrediting anybody for having these kind of feelings or who have serious depressive thoughts, but I think even in adulthood, we have moments where we're really grim and dour and can't think properly. And it does just take a little bit of, you know, our moods can shift on a dime. And maybe that's just the swing of a mood.
Well, Jesse, I hate to do this. I'm going to blow up your point.
Not again.
And I do think that there is an explanation for the shift in his outlook, but I don't think that it is necessarily apparent, and it is not something that I'm ready to share just yet.
Ooh, okay. I'm curious. I have a feeling like with all these cryptic, like, ooh, we're gonna talk about this later. We're gonna ultimately end up at the same song, but we're not gonna say it either on recording or off recording because I want it to be as natural of a surprise as it can be. And I'm using surprise in big air quotes here.
Well, I only have one last thing to say about, and this is more of like a passing idea, which is, and I'm going back because I know we just talked about the end of the song. Mm. I always liked the line, "She had eyes bright enough to burn me. They reminded me of yours," because it almost felt self-referential, because putting eyes as bright as yours, or eyes bright enough to burn me, and your band is called Bright Eyes. And with this kind of idea that we teased about Connor feeling almost self-conscious about putting himself on display in his records, that feels intentional. When he says "reminded me of yours," maybe he was personifying the band, or like what the band means, or something like that with it. Again, you know, just a little passing note, something I wanted to throw in there, because every time I listen through the song, my brain pulls out that line. So I wanted to pick it out.
Yeah, that's lovely. I also, whenever I pass that line, I definitely can't help but think that that has to be self-referential. And a last passing thought or reference that I want to make is I do think it's very funny that the song that the character Connor sings into the machine and writes in the diary is a Johnny Cash song. And it's like the complete opposite mood and vibe of this song. It's very like slow and lovely and sweet. And the song is just like very young and desperate and angry. I just find that its reference is very funny.
Actually, I remember being young, listening to this song and showing my dad some like Conor Oberst Bright Eyes stuff. He goes, I know that song. It was a neat little nod thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we both ended this on some neat little things, and well, we're about to get into some more less passing notes and more meaty subject matter with Something Vague.
All right, this brings us to track number 4. Now, I think this is going to be a great convergence point, because I had referenced earlier that I felt a lot of cursive influence here and some Tim Casher influence. And I'm sure Chris has so much to say about this track. So one of the things that I wanted to point to was the fact that this is the most self-referential that we've seen Connor as both a character and a performer in one song, I think, right? I think you might have a lot you want to say about this, but I do think it's interesting that throughout the song, I don't think we've seen quite as much a blend of those two personas as we have in Something Vague so far.
Yeah, definitely. I think the idea, again, that story of Connor bearing it all in his music is something that comes heavy with Something Vague that he really speaks to. And although I'd picked up on some of that stuff listening to it in the past, I don't think I made the full connection to everything else in the album until going back to it for this and reading through all the tracks. On a personal note, this is my favorite Bright Eyes song. I think this is arguably, you know, and it's subjective because there's personal context that goes in with your favorite songs. But I think this is the most beautiful in terms of, you know, there's maybe not anything extravagant or flashy. But do yourself a favor, listen to this song, listen to the music, the instruments. The way that they blend is just so pristine. It's just everything about it, the build, the way, and Connor's voice building with it, and the different stages, the way he sings, the way it changes, creates just such a beautiful, beautiful space for him. At the flute and your boy on the accordion and all that great stuff. Yeah, first verse, I don't think that there's much hidden. You know, I don't think you need to do much digging to understand what he's talking about. Kind of like feeling stuck, feeling in a rut. But I do think his use of you is interesting, because I wonder, like, is it all of us? You know, is it the royal you? Or is he speaking to someone specifically? The fact that at the end of the song, when he says, is this death really you? I wonder if he might actually be speaking to someone specifically, whereas previously I had always just thought of it as the royal you. So I'll just keep on the roll. And also, you know what? It's my favorite song. I get to talk a lot. All right. So I
still have 911 on call. So like, be very careful about how you use this time.
We've heard the sirens. So I
yep. Although hopefully if we did our job, you didn't hear the sirens.
That's true, yeah. So the second verse, there's a dream in his brain that just won't go away. And in my attempt to understand it, my interpretation is that Connor is standing at the precipice between his life in Omaha, because, you know, in the house where he lived with his mom and his brothers, and this, and I have to do it, this vague future that yep. exists. So the bridge and his connection to his past is gone, and he's stuck. He can no longer reach this future, which also then speaks back to that first verse of being in a rut, of feeling stuck, of not knowing where to go. So he doesn't have a home. He doesn't have a defined future, or his plan for his future is gone. Maybe that is where his counterpart in the first song went, right? Mitchell is moving. And maybe that future is where they were able to reach, that he feels that he can't get to. So then Connor is hanged. And I'll hang like a star, fucking glow in the dark, for all the starving eyes to see. So Connor is hanged. Now is a spectacle for us. We are the starving eyes, and we get to marvel, mouth agape, at this
slack-jawed
at this musician who is just putting his traumas on display, and how he figuratively hangs himself in his music. And we ogle. I do also think that it's interesting that the theme of something around your neck comes back, because you did mention, in terms of the music box and someone turning on a spindle, that act of hanging, and it calls back to that as well with the locket, letting it choke your neck, or my reading of the necklace being a display of him sweating out his fever. This speaks directly to that as well. So I think maybe that's what he means when he ponders if this death is really, quote unquote, you. It's almost like Connor and this other person share an origin story, right? They share this whatever event, the secret, the memory, but now seem to be divorced from one another. And those last lines speak back to that shared secret that follows him around like a ghost, and something they can't see, but they still feel hanging behind them. Do you have to call 911?
No, actually, I'm having a moment right now where you're sparking some idea in me that I didn't have before.
Okay.
And so the note that I put for this the lines that you're talking about right now is, already Connor is trying to reconcile his misery with his, quote, fame.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to think that, are those lines sort of a way of, there's this tug and pull that I'm feeling here, that when you create art, it is a part of yourself, but it's also like a projection of yourself. So it's you and not you all at once. Right. So if this hanging figure that he just talked about, is that death really you? Is it, could it be like him even wondering if this misery is his in the first place? Like, am I really this miserable? Is it this dramatic? Is this the art that I'm putting out, and now I'm confusing for who I am as Connor Oberst, the person?
Right,
and
right.
The performer. That, like, I'm not lying when I say, like, this is literally coming to me as we're recording this. Like, that would then make the last couple of songs make sense, as far as I had mentioned in the previous track, how that turn seems to come out of nowhere. Maybe right. This is one of those bridges to say, like, there is that hint of, okay, that makes more sense. I'm actually coming to this as we're recording. Like, if that is a valid interpretation of this, then maybe that's where those last two songs of the album come from. Of, maybe I'm getting too wrapped up in my own artifice to realize that I'm not this miserable.
Right.
Maybe. right? Like, I don't want to discredit anybody's feelings or like to disenfranchise people who are, you know, feeling this down in the weeds, so to say. But maybe sometimes we can get wrapped up in our own narrative of what's happening, and we do need to take a step back and say, it's not... Maybe this is one of the cases where it's not as bad as it seems.
Right.
And while mostly the view is accurate, maybe this time it's not.
It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, bringing that back in, I really like that idea. Is what you're doing really, truly who you are? Mm. And wrestling with that idea of yourself, of this tortured artist, does this have to be me? But still, at the end of it, he expresses some doubt. You know, do these dreams have any meaning? No. I think it's more like it goes like he is still working through some of those thoughts and trying to understand what he thinks about it. And almost like that idea of working through it, you could take it in a way that he is very earnestly trying to work through this stuff in these lyrics, that almost like he could have written them off the cuff and was just, I scribbled that on a napkin somewhere and it was like, eh, I don't feel like changing it. I think that works in the song or something like that. It also would
yeah, fit. I get what you're saying. Yeah.
It would also fit our way of thinking of him as like this, you know, perfect genius that like, oh yeah, scribbled some things on a napkin and yeah, I'm just going to make a hit record off of that.
Yeah, I was just, on tour for my last success and I'm just, off the cuff, just wrote on a cocktail napkin, some cocktail napkin epitaph. But I like your interpretation of the but now I'm confused as sort of an interruption maybe to a previous writing session of let me walk away from this, let me come back to it and look at like previous writing or a previous idea that I had and question that. And maybe that's just something that we're blind to, seeing the finished product and not the process of getting there. But bringing up that whole idea of like working through something, and we maybe focus a little more on a character working through their own internal turmoil, I would see that. I think that does make sense. And I think that's a really interesting analysis.
I'll say it once, I'll say it again. It's the best Bright Eyes song. Don't at me. It's
everybody. I want you to at Chris and I want you to tell him that he's right.
I'm moving from it's a subjective opinion that it's my favorite to it's the best and that's fact and go away. Well, man, I don't know. Anything else for something vague?
No, I think we got this one covered.
All right, let's mosey on over. It's Chris from the future, and well, I lied because we're not moseying anywhere except for the end of this episode. We will be picking up. We just decided to cut this down into smaller bite-sized pieces, so we'll be picking up on Movement of a Hand next, but that's going to be on the next episode, so keep listening for your chance to win. Nothing but more weird takes from us. Okay, bye.